What is better than a conversation with a Zooton? A conversation with two Zootons. Welcome to episode 103 of Real Feedback, where my guests are Dave McCabe and Abby Harding, frontman and saxophonist for the Zootons, who recently returned proper after a 16-year break with stonking new single, Creeping on the Dance Floor, soon to be followed by brilliant new album, The Big Decider, on April 26th. We spoke about how the recording process worked with super producers Nile Rodgers and Ian Brody, and whether there was in fact a third producer too. Ooh, tantalising. We also talked Dave's feelings on his solo album and the last Zootons album, Dave and Abby living and writing together in lockdown, a brilliant John Lydon story that didn't favour Dave well, and more. There is a part near the end where I'll jump in, as I had to cut out some of the chat as Dave decided to tell me of upcoming Zooton plans that haven't yet been announced. So I'll just pop in to remind you of that so it doesn't seem that I've done a big old edit mistake in the episode. Apologies for the delays between episodes at the moment. Three kids and two jobs is taking its toll on my free time, but more is coming, so stick with me. You can follow the podcast on X and Instagram at RealFeedbackPod, or go to realfeedback.co.uk for latest and past episode info, including Edgar Wright, Brian Blessed, loads of cracking musicians and movie folk candidly telling all. This isn't an interview. This is a conversation. This is Real Feedback. The first thing I wanted to ask you guys was what feels different being back into the sort of campaign trail after such a long time away, because, you know, everything is, well, now is Zoom, rather. You don't have to go into an office or into a pub to meet up with journalists and stuff to do your interviews. You can just sit on the sofa.
You only have to get off dressed.
Yeah, there you go. Pajama bottoms. I love it.
It's nice to be able to, it's nice because you're speaking to people a lot of the time before, you just be on the phone. So it's nice to see. Right. So I know you, especially because, you know, if a lot of the people are from London, you'd just be on the phone to them. So it's nice to see faces. But yeah, you do miss that. When you do get a chance to meet up with people, you do miss the actual connection thing. But
absolutely.
I don't know. What do you think, Dave? It's different, isn't it? It's just, we're just getting our heads around it, I guess, because we're just.
I can't really remember. What I would say is, you used to be on the phone to, like, Japanese people quite, like, and you'd have, like, 10 phone calls on the row in the house, and it was always a little bit, you know...
intense.
A bit weird because, yeah, there was, like, translators and stuff like that as well at times on the phone. And in when you're in Japan doing them type of things, it was weird, but on the phone... just hearing it going on was just bizarre. It was it was the most un-rock and roll thing you could imagine.
Well, I remember I spoke to, I think it was Paul from Maximo Park, and he didn't have his camera on. And so I just kept interrupting him because I didn't know when he'd stopped speaking. And you kind of read people's faces to kind of get, you know, it is really hard. So on the phone would be the same, especially if Japanese as well, and there's a language barrier. I mean, just banging the phone against your head.
I think I'm a lot, it's just at the moment, I'm a lot more aware of what I'm saying. Whereas it used to be, you just turn up and do it without thinking about it. So now I think personally, I'm just more nervous. So not nervous, but, you know, just.
We're giving it more thought, aren't you? I think you're just giving it more thought, which is good, but it maybe makes you feel a bit more nervous because you're preparing it a bit more, but even in the moment.
You'll hear about it or you'll see it on your phone. It'll come up, which means it's very much out in the public. It's not just a magazine that's on a shelf for a month and then no one hears about it again. It can keep coming back and back and back. So you can't be really flippant or turn up in a weird mood and convey that. You have to, like, be fairly respectful.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, at the end when we sign off, I always ask my guests if there's anything they want me to take out, because I never want to be. I mean, I'm not a journalist anyway. I've been in bands for 30 years myself. So the last thing I want to do is for you to go away going, shit, what did I say that? So
exactly.
So if something comes out, that's fine. It can go. I'll get rid of it. That's no problem.
Okay.
One of the things, the other thing I want to talk to you, I know there are probably a lot of people, the question is, oh, why have you been away, you know, away for so long and now you're coming back? I'm not going to ask that because you've probably already been asked that 100 times. But So I had a band years ago, and we split up in 2007, and then we got back together 2 years ago. So we had a 17-year break. So obviously you're a famous band and my one was an unsigned band, but I still know how I felt getting back with those people after that time, and how I would, my life would change at that point from the 27 or whatever I was year old when the band split. So I just wanted to know from your perspective of, you know, being older now, being lives in a different place, how it felt stepping back into the Zooton shoes.
Good. It felt like, right. Felt like I basically that this is the place we're meant to be at this point in time. That's what it feels like to me anyway. Yeah, and you can sit there and go, why didn't we do this sooner and all that? But I just think everything happens for a reason in its own time, and things are going pretty well. People are liking, you know, the songs are going down well. So I think, like, yeah, I could sit there and say I should have done this, I shouldn't have done that, but it's a tough one, because, you know, I was kind of just in the wilderness for a very long time and wasn't very present. So now being present, it's good to have this to focus on.
It feels I think we didn't know what to expect as well, because, you know, after such a long time, so it feels really lovely that people still want to come and see us. So it's like we're really grateful that's, and we believe in what we're doing. So we, like, not that we were like, oh, everyone's going to love it, but we love it. We love the record that we've made and playing the new songs live. So it just feels good. It feels good. It feels right, like Dave said.
Yeah. Well, I am going to be coming on to Stroking Your Ego about the album very soon, because I love it. And it features a song which is now a contender for my song of the year. What song is it? It's not one of the singles. Did you have a genuine fear then that people would hear stuff and just go, look, we're not interested, you've been away too long, no thank you, sort of thing?
Well, yes, sometimes as well things get lost, because there's so much comes out now. If you're not remembered at all from, like, before, so, like, if there's no interest in, like you know, everyone's grown up now, we're, you know, they're our age, or with fans that are when we were out there, if no one remembers, things can just get lost in the pipeline kind of thing when they come out, because it's just there's constant music coming out.
I think basically, like, I had done a solo record which was kind of electronic and was like synthesizers and guitars, and I toured it. I never toured it. I tried to tour it. I had to cancel a tour because it didn't sell any tickets. Right.
You did a good few gigs though, didn't you?
Yeah, they had a load of gigs, but not as much. It was never settled. It was, and playing to a backing track, a heavy, like, there was five of us on stage, but for some reason, I remember one day I was in, I was at the bar in Soundcheck, and it was just the drummer in Soundcheck, and there was no band on the stage, but you could hear the song. With no vocals, and it's like, this is a bit weird, isn't it? But then when it got on, it was kind of like, all that's going through your head. But it was all quite Spinal Tap for me, because everyone used to wear masks and, like, hoods. So it was, I went down a really, like, I'm glad I went down that route and I'd done it, because I really like the album still to this day. But I'm glad I got that out of my system and didn't say an aunt.
Yeah, he's got the gown out the way, the cloak, whatever.
I didn't say an aunt to the Zootons and say, what about this? You know what I mean? Let's go in this direction. Let's wear this. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was just, it's good to have got that out. So for me, and, you know, people were literally, they weren't interested. And one of the songs, the singles, it could be a Zooton song. It's called Let Me Go. And I think maybe we could do it in the future. I'm not, you know.
I was going to say that.
What I'm saying is that when it was out, when that thing came out, no one was interested. No one gave a flying fuck. So I know how that feels. So from that to this, for me, it's like, it's really positive. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's because I've done shit sandwich. Basically, I've done shark sandwich. I got that out.
Yeah. Got it out of your system. I just wanted to talk a bit about how the songwriting process changed, because I read that you were leaving lyrics on the table. You guys lived together during COVID, and you were leaving lyrics on the table for someone else to come in and have a look. And rather than say to someone's face, "I think this is shit,
I don't like this,"
yeah. You just come in and be crossed out and replaced in the morning.
Yeah, it was Dave and Sean mainly who done that.
I'll be honest, I can't remember doing that because I was pretty much off my tits
right,
a lot
okay.
of the time. I'm not saying it's not true, but
yeah.
But I can't be, when I say I can't remember, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I just remember it being fun, and I don't.
Yeah.
Go on, Abby, you answered it because
Sean lived with Dave when he got stuck in Liverpool. He was living in LA and he got stuck here because of COVID. And Dave said he could live with him. So he moved into Dave's. And Dave hadn't stopped writing, do you know what I mean? There's, you know, throughout all the time that we weren't together, but he'd been writing. And when Sean moved in, I don't know how it initially started, but I remember it was either Creeping or Water, or it might have even been an early one that we didn't even use. I remember because I moved in for a bit because I lived on my own. I didn't want to be on my own, so I came in as well. And I remember coming down, and there'd be lyrics on the table, and then later on they'd be gone. And then it wouldn't be like there'd be a new set there, but it would back at the idea Dave and Sean in the little studio that Dave had in his house, you know, bashing them out or recording them, doing like a demo of them. So there was that. But you'd use like the way Creeping came about was. Not lyrics on the table, but you come in with the idea, and Sean had the beat, and you went off and had a walk and came up with more lyrics and came back. So it was like, you know, it was kind of like passing it over, and then a little bit was added, and then another bit was added, and another bit.
It just came together really quick, and it was the most fun I think I've had with the Zootons in terms of writing a song, because. Let's not lie about it. If you wrote a song in the house and you're bearing your soul and someone just says, "I don't like that," it's kind of like makes you want to leave the band instantly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's hard to hear, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's just, but I think that song, it all came about pretty quick. So any lyrics that Sean didn't like, rather than say he didn't like it, he went off and wrote some lyrics. So I think that's the best. That's the thing that's different now than to what was years ago, is that people are actually putting the money where their mouths is rather than just going like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think it's hard to say because the last album we made, in my opinion, there was no really good songs on it. There was about two things on it there was like three. You know what I mean? In my opinion, it wasn't really like a situation where anyone had the energy to do that. So that's the... I forgot the question, but I'm just going to keep talking anyway.
you go for it.
That's the difference now, is I think it's a bit more grown up in the sense that... Or it's a bit more caring. And it's a bit more like a... Everyone knows it's more like a family than mates. But you know what I mean? By being like that, you do become more mates and more friendly. Yeah. And I think... I don't know,
No, I agree with what you're saying, dude.
But also, I mean, we did another album, but I had that hindsight of listening to the albums I did in 2000 up to 2007, and now knowing what I like and disliked about the song. I mean, the songwriting style changes anyway, but I guess you have the hindsight of listening back to those early records for 15, 16 years and just knowing what sort of songwriting styles work for you and things like that. So I guess if the fourth Zootons album came out in 2010, it would be very different to what is about to come out at the end of April.
Your taste change, not your taste get like they get added to, so you start listening to like it's things that you wouldn't have listened to in your 20s, and they influence you a bit. So maybe like the sound of the record or the your songwriting, you know, you might be listening to like the Doobie Brothers when you were in 20 years ago, or Steely Dan or something like that, and maybe something goes in and that wouldn't have 20 years ago because you're not listening to that 20 years ago. So I think that changes maybe the songwriting a little bit.
We've never been a band that really wants to be Joy Division. And I think that was a massive difference with our band and a lot of bands in the noughties. And I know that sounds like alienating almost, but what I'm saying is that a lot of bands in the noughties kind of went ding, 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 ding. Do you know what I mean? And Even now when I hear it on the radio, if I put Radio X on and they play that stuff, it's like, it's mad. It's not bad. It's not bad music. But it's, and then, because I was like, why don't they play our songs more often? Do you know what I mean? Like the old ones. And it's like, they stand out like a sore thumb.
I think, yeah, but a good sore thumb.
They were never in style, so they never...
yeah.
The thing is, though, you always know a Zooton song. You always, straight away, you always know a Zooton song. But the songs you're talking about, that could be one of 50 bands. You're 100% right there.
But saying that, like, I heard the... what are they called? Oh, there was an American band out... Well, don't look at me that way.
The Bravery.
The Bravery. But that come on, and I was like, wow, this is like another band. This is another band who was like doing that deep voice, like Ian Curtis type of thing. Do you know what I mean?
And, yeah.
But I liked it now. When I heard it now, because it reminded me of back then, I enjoyed it. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, so these have mixed the Schmitz and Joy Division together, but they're American. So I was like, oh, that's so now you're older, you can, you, one big point is that now you're older, you can kind of see things more clearly. But I'm not sure it's always the best way. I think you need to get, like Abby, like I noticed Abby, she stuttered on Steely Dan and the Doobie Brothers because it's not, it's like dad music, innit? It's like Supertramp. I've been listening to the Eagles. And I know that's like, wow, this is terrible, Dave. Don't put this in. And it's like, well, put it in. Because that's what I listen to in my car with my son. And become that fella. But it's but like, I don't care. You know, it's like, because I'm not an eagle. So it can only enhance good songwriting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's my reason. That's my excuse.
Well, like I said, Abby, because you play the saxophone, there aren't that many bands. I mean, although Sam Fender's last, he's a big sax. What's the word I'm looking for? Someone who pushes. I can't remember the word, but yeah, someone who's he's got a lot of saxophone on the record. So when you're listening to stuff to get inspired or just to, you know, are you listening? Because, you know, Dave could listen to something.
I'm not listening to saxophone music.
Right, okay.
No,
okay.
Like,
it's just style. Like
I'll listen to some, like, I occasionally do have saxophonists that I really like, but I don't tend to play sax. Like, there's some jazz saxophonists that I like, but I'm not like a big E Street Band fan because of the saxophone or, you know, George Michael or anything. Like, I do love George Michael, but I'm not like listening to it for saxophone.
You like Wolf Peck?
I don't mind Wolf Peck. Yeah, they're all, I love that instrumental. Yeah, I don't know loads
that
of it.
One song.
That's the one. Yeah. But no, I'd listen to, like, do you know what? Like, so the way Sly and the Family Stone used horns, like that, or Funkadelic, like that's more what I get inspiration from. Like, I'll learn. Like, there's a, I don't know if it's under Funkadelic or Parliament, but it's Up for the Downstroke is the record, and that's got loads of interesting horns that play amongst each other, but they're not like, it's not like the big sax solos. It's like James Brown horn hooks, like that kind of thing. Like, that's what I love, that kind of thing. I'm not listening to, you know, a sax player. Like, I love like Bobby Keys when he plays with the Rolling Stones. Like, that's like rock and roll sax, that's great. But I'm not like, oh, I've got to put on some saxophone music to get inspired. I don't. It's just I just put music on, like, anything that will inspire me.
You're not listening to The Lost Boys, are you?
No, although you always say that.
Probably one of the most famous saxophone.
And he still gigs.
Yeah.
He still gigs, and I believe he still goes shirtless as well.
Tim Capello.
No way.
Yeah. He's about 70 now. He's like, no, shirt's coming off. That is a great soundtrack, though. Lost Boys. That is what's the Cry Little
Amazing.
Sister? Yeah, Cry Little Sister. Well, let's talk about the new album, because a band that hasn't had an album out for a while. I don't think there's ever been such a quick amount of time before I've like, yep, we're safe. So it was about three notes into Creeping. I was like, this is going to be good. Like, straight away, that riff.
Okay.
So that's a banger to open with. I still haven't got to the favourite song yet. But so I've read that two producers, Nile Rodgers and Ian Brody. So what were they in the studio at the same time together, or did you do some with one guy and some with another? I mean, I just couldn't really get my head around Ian Brody and Nile Rodgers.
Yeah, let's imagine them two in the studio together at the
two
same time.
Guys.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
No. No, it was Niall first, and then Ian later on.
Okay.
So you're going to have to ask me a question, and I can tell you because there's a lot in it. I can't. Otherwise, I'll give you the mad timeline of things, and it's kind of, I've been doing it loads. So
right. Do it.
Do you know what I mean?
So Abbey Road, was it all at Abbey Road? Was the whole album recorded at Abbey Road? That was just the.
It was the Niall. All the stuff with Niall was with. Yeah, it was with Abbey. He was. He at the time, I don't know if he still is, but he was like the musical director of in Abbey Road or something. So he used whatever the studio 3 or 2, I don't know which one, I can't remember the number we were in. That was his place. He used to do everything. So that's why we went there. It was his choice. Not that we were like complaining about it. But then we came back, obviously, a long story short, after doing everything with Niall. We knew we needed to revisit a couple of songs, and that's why we went with Ian. It wasn't that was a year later in Rockfield Studios in South Wales. We did 3 tracks with him, in which we used.
We actually done a new song. We didn't do In Your Arms with Niall either. So
oh yeah, of
course. That was new thing. That I wrote afterwards. So
was Pauline done with Niall?
Yeah,
because there's a guitar.
No.
There's a guitar set in the background of that that's really funky, but there's also that bit in the second verse where it drops out to just your vocals and the drums. And
it was Niall, but then Sean did most of that when we got back home.
Oh, because I immediately started going, like, I thought this has got funk Niall written all over it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, Sean, I think that was probably Sean.
We need to tell you, basically, I'm just going to tell you straight, I'm going to be honest. So we've done about what? 10 songs with Niall.
Yeah.
Not a lot of them, not say half of them didn't work out. But we kept like a lot of it, what we'd recorded, like drums, bass, bits of guitar, bits of vocal. But then we went in with completely redone some of the songs. And then Ian left the studio after we'd done the ones that he was, you know, definitely going to have his name on producing. And then we stayed in the studio with the setup in Rockfield in Wales. And then we carried on. Mm. And then after that, when we went home, and then Sean, the drummer in our band, he produced quite a bit of it as well. So it's got a lot going on. That's why it kind of took at the time it did. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's done a really good job. He's done an amazing job. But I never really, it's like, you don't want to piss Niall off. You don't want to piss Ian off. You don't want to piss these big name producers off, because they were really good.
Yeah.
And what they brought to it is, you know, incredible. But a lot of credit goes to Sean, the drummer.
Yeah.
Because he was he had to do it. I wasn't going to produce it because I don't know how, but he got his book out. He got his mics and he got on the case and he done it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was intense, wasn't it? It was like about 6 months. But from like that October, we got back from Rockfield. Then we got back like October 1st, October 2nd. And then until the next February, he was just in the studio, like with either me or you, recording constantly. Like it was quite intense, but he had to finish it. So like, and like Dave said, he did a really good job.
Well, I guess even if Niall's stuff wasn't used, it informs the next part of the process. And you know, it's as important to know what you don't want as what you do want, I think, when you're writing stuff. So,
I mean, it wasn't a complete thing. Do you know what I mean? We had to go back and redo stuff because I think the songs were kind of like, we rehearsed them for like 2 weeks before we went in. So we had versions and we had the songs, but we didn't. Just not all the sounds felt right, and that's not on Niall, but it's not on us. It just didn't work at that particular time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like we could make this more to our taste, not better, but just more to what we like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And how were you recording? Do you record? Do you do a live track and then just overlay?
Yeah, we do everything live, and then we keep what we can, and then we'll overdub. Like the vocals, most of the vocals we did again, didn't we? But and I think I did like hot when we were with Niall. I did a couple of sax bits again, but we kept some. But then because we redid a lot of stuff back here, we ended up obviously redoing a lot of guitars and saxophone and vocals. Some of those vocals you did keep from, oh, that was just from Abbey Road, sorry, yeah. But we always do it live first to get the good feel.
Well, one of my favourite vocals is in Company, the two vocals together, the line, I know you think you know what's best for me.
Oh, yeah.
But now I'm going to tell you what my favourite song on the album is, right?
Going to do a thing now.
Oh, yeah.
One, two.
Exclusive. But I want you to guess what my favourite track is on the album.
Rise.
Right, you think Rise.
I'll say Water.
No, Disappear.
Okay, cool.
Oh, my God.
I think that's like the most Zootons, like what you'd expect. Or not kind of, like it's got like a quite a Zootons-y thing to it, Disappear, from like what we used to do as well. And not in a good way, like in a good way.
Oh, no, I just like it just, so it starts how it starts. And then you've got the chorus, which is kind of sort of, I hate doing the comparisons, but people listening to this haven't heard the song yet. Kind of 70s Elton John kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And then it just breaks down again and your sax comes in. And then at the end you've got Nile Rodgers reading talking. Oh my God. Yeah. And I bet you had all these different takes of him doing the, he does this reading at the end. I won't say what, spoil it. And I just thought, well, how many, it said 20, and I just imagine him doing it in a cowboy voice or something. Just like, what about this, guys? So how did you convince him?
Dave wrote that. It was Dave. Dave wrote that and asked them to. Yeah, and it didn't take much convincing, did it?
Right.
No, he'd done about 20 takes and he'd done it really professional. And then he got into words, like, because it says why at the end. He'd done about 15, 20 whys. He was just dead good, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was
like,
brilliant.
It was like being in Hollywood, like Pixar. It was like what you'd imagine would go on in them studios. It was just proper turned on the style. Like, it was funny.
He enjoyed it. I think he was loving it.
I didn't think he'd go for it so openly, but he was just like, yeah, go on, passes it. And he just went in and nailed it straight away. And I was like...
Well, you'd be thinking, well, otherwise we've got to ask Ian to do it.
He made Carl in... Carl Walken, I'll say his name. He thought it was me. He went, what did you do? See a voice there on that song? Yeah. He thought like I'd put an effect on my voice.
You should do some voiceover work with that, Dave. There's a sideline there.
I know. I should have kept it up, shouldn't I? But I couldn't. I just based on laughing and said,
go on, Dave, do the voice. No. Well, I've got an Ian Brody story of my own that... It would have been about 2003, 2004. Me and the guys from my band used to go to Notting Hill Arts Club because Alan
this
McGee...
This could go anyway.
Well, no, it's not bad against... I owe Ian Brody an apology, basically. Yes. So Alan McGee used to DJ there, have a night down there, Death Disco, I think it was called. And we used to go down there to try and, punt our demo out. And you get the odd celeb in there, Brett Anderson and whatever. And Ian Brody was in there one night and we were absolutely smashed. And... we decided to go and chat to him and try and befriend him. So to try and get, in the scene. And it must have been about 15 minutes. There were three of us in the band. I mean, I'm 6 foot. The other two are a lot shorter than me, but we surrounded him and just talked at him for 10 or 15 minutes, left it, and then thought, should we do it again? and we did it about two or three times that night. And he was very polite about it, but you could just tell, you could see the look in his eyes. He's just thinking, just fuck off, please. Yeah, so Ian, if you're listening, I'm very sorry. That was me, and I apologise. But he was very gracious.
He's a patient fella.
Do you know, Ian, on the first record, like when we were doing the first album, I had a lot of emotional stuff come to the surface. And it's because years, you've wanted to do. This has been your dream for so many years. So then when your dream starts becoming a reality, it freaks you out. It did with me. I started feeling really like, I started getting loads of intrusive thoughts. Like I started thinking about wrists getting sliced, but then I'd think, I don't want to slice my fucking wrists. Why am I thinking about it? Why does this image keep popping in my fucking head all the time, right? So loads of stuff like that was going on. And everyone else seems to be going, yay, we're making it as a band. And I'm just like this on the bus. But like, so I turned around to Ian one day because we had to redo some stuff. And I told him, we walked down to the coffee shop, just me and him, and I told him. And I pulled my heart out to him, you know, expecting something like back from him. And he turned around to me and he went, well, this is why people start taking smack and crack, Dave. You know, this is great, like. And I just looked at him and I looked at him and I thought, this is the worst person I could have told my problem. But at the time, a lot of his family and he was going through a lot himself. Yeah. So basically, in a good way, for like, it was probably what I needed to hear because he was just like, look, mate, do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know what you want me to say. He's like, this way. Yeah. He didn't say that though, but the way he said it was like, you know, just say in case, get your head up. But this is why people start doing smoking crack.
Not what you were expecting.
I don't think he's ever smoked crack or smack in his life. I've never seen him take drugs in his life. That's what makes it more Ian. You don't know what I mean? Because Abby said, you just don't know what you're going to get at. But I've over the years, I've just grown to love it and I encourage it now. It's like, I want him to come out with something that's completely off the wall. Or I want him to go. Like, I remember on the first record, I went in and I felt sick. And I just had it every weekend. And I went in and I sat next to him and I said, you know, I feel a bit weird, like I'm coming down with something. I feel dead edgy. You know, the same thing again, but this was after that, or before it, sorry. And he turns around to me and goes, you know what? I felt a bit like that lately. And that was it for all fucking week after this. He was going, do you know what, Dave? I don't half feel sick, you know. It's just like, I don't half. I really feel heavy today. And I was just like, me? Why? Don't tell this fella your problems. You just pull all this to the surface.
Yeah.
And you'll soon be sorry.
I played with him for like about 3 years at the time that we went doing. So that was one of the things I did. And so you're on a bus with him a lot and he's just got story after story. He's got a book out. You've got to get it. I read it in about a day. It's brilliant. And I thought I'd heard all his stories and I'm reading it going, what? I never did know about this one. But you know what? He's one of the, in the studio, I've never felt more at ease with someone. Like, he's the nicest guy. Like, he's a real, like, I don't want to say father figure, but he's like, I could go to him with a problem, do you know what I mean? And he'd like put his arm around me. And when you're actually doing stuff, like you're doing your take in the studio, he's dead patient with you. He knows your limits and he knows where your limits are, do you know what I mean? And he knows not what to ask you kind of thing. And he gets for me personally, he got the best out of me because I just felt so comfortable. I wasn't like, because he was a friend as well, I guess, but like, he's such a great guy and he's a really great producer.
So one of the things I wanted to ask about was, so there's only 9 tracks on the album and the others are sort of 12, 13. Was that, you just whittled down and go, no, this is right. These are, you might have had a 10th track you kind of thought about, or you just went, oh, these are the 9 songs, the exact right ones that we want on the album. That's it, done.
As a band, we always try and get the best running order. And we always, Tony, one of our managers, is really good with it. And he's really like listens to it over and over again. And he's kind of like quite, you know, focused, hyper focused on it. Do you know what I mean? And everyone in the band is. So when we could, that's why there's only 9 on it, because it was like, this runs so good. There's no point in adding unnecessary thing, because you want to put it, for me, you want to put it on as an album, start to finish in the car or while you're doing whatever, and you don't want to be switching. I hate doing that when I'm driving. It's bloody breaking the law anyway, but you just want to put an album on, don't you, and drive. And it's, for me, because it starts kind of like, you know, funky and that, but by the end it kind of goes into this dreamy like scape somewhere, and it's on paper that doesn't sound right. It sounds like it should end with a bang and start with a bang, like a set. But I think that's what's really good about it. And every time I've listened to it, I drove to Southport to pick my partner up. And it just seems to get, like, not to blow my own fucking thing, but or our thing, it gets better and better as it goes on. And it's like, and you forget what's coming next. Do you know what I mean? But another reason I'd say while I'm chatting is if you look at, like, Animals, Pink Floyd, or Tego Mago by Can, or Remain in Light, like some of my favourite records, or Marquee Moon, they only have like 8 songs on. Or any Led Zepp album, they only ever have 8 songs on, and it's short, sweet, and it makes you want to put it back to the start. It's not like, oh, this one, do you know what I mean? Or this fucking thing, do you know what I mean?
Marquee Moon is in my top 3 albums ever, I think.
Yeah, you want to skate, yeah.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw them do that live at Roundhouse as well a few years ago. It was just... Yeah, but you're saying about an album starting and ending on a banger. I can't remember who I had on before, but the album ended quietly. And I said, for me, the analogy I use is it's like you do a gig, you got your songs, and the last track when it's quiet is kind of like switching off the light and leaving the room. So I like that sort of thing. And to sound really poncy, this album tracklist, it feels like, and I hate myself for saying this, a journey. But it really, you know, so what you're saying, Dave, is absolutely right, because...
Why? What's wrong with that?
It's just it's a cliche, isn't it? Oh, you really get taken on a journey. But
there's only so many... what are you going to call it, a quest?
No, I don't know. But no, because by the time you get to Disappear and then you've got Company and you're really in the vibe, and then the Big Decider comes in and goes, right, here we go, guys, we're back up again. You're, whoa, yeah. I mean, it is the perfect track listing for these songs, so...
Cool. Thank you.
That's nice.
So when's the you've just done a run of intimate shows, is that right? And you've got the tour in April. What's the plan for the rest of the year going ahead? Once, because the album's out 26th of April, I should say. 26th of April, the album's out.
We've got, do you know what? I don't know what we were meant to put out there, you know? It's like, I know, sorry to be boring, but I know we've got a few, we've got some gigs with Madness, I know I can say that. And we've got a few things going on. I think we want to do like a tour at the end of the year. But
just jumping in here to say, this is the bit I've needed to cut out. Maybe I'll put it back in once it's been announced. But Dave did let me know about some stuff coming up for the Zootons that hasn't been announced, so I'm not allowed to put it in. So we're going to skip a bit and go back to two good stories about Dave Byrne and John Lydon. Did you ever have moments, either of you, where once things started kicking off, you'd meet someone that you admired growing up and you just were wanted to talk to them?
Yeah, I met David Byrne at the Museum of Modern Art. And
God.
We done a gig there, the Open.
In
New York, yeah. And I turned round and he was just stood next to me. And I went, all right, mate. And I was like, I'm a really big fan. I said, did you see our band? And he said, no. He went, thanks, you know, for being a fan. And he said, no, I thought the music would start a lot later. And I was like, yeah, it should start later, shouldn't it? I realised what was happening. And I said, anyway, have a really good night. And I just turned around and walked away and then stood in the corner and on my own and looked at him for a bit like that, drinking.
Yeah.
And then I went and found these and just went, guess who I've just met? Do you know what I mean? Guess who I've just fucking met, like? But yeah, I think that if he, you know, I wasn't expecting it. I didn't even know he was going to be there, and then to just turn around and he was there. At the time, I was listening to them every day. I was basically trying to impersonate him on that first album quite a lot with certain things, the way I sang and stuff, but just not like the way I sing, but like at the end of like a Van a Gang Brawl, I go, aye, 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 aye. And that's a David Byrne move, do you know what I mean? So a lot of it was coming out. He's a big inspiration.
Yeah, me, Dave and Sean years ago did like a little European radio tour, and we did a session on WFM in Paris, and when we were leaving, DJ said, the DJ went, oh, we've got Bill Wyman coming in after yous, and we were like, oh, fucking hell, wow, Bill Wyman comes to us. So we were waiting outside, and he comes in with like a few miles, and I was waiting there, and he walks up to the door, and I wanted to get his autograph for Russ, for the bass player, And I went, oh, can I have your autograph? I have Bill, I'm Abby, can I have your autograph, please? And he just went, can I have your autograph, please? And, like, mimicked me. And I was just like,
oh, my God.
And he just went.
You should have followed it. You should have followed it up with, I'm a massive wanker. No, see if he copies that.
That's cool.
What?
Yeah, he was a bit of a knob.
That's terrible. Yeah. That is terrible.
Can I have your autograph, please? I was like, fuck off, you twat.
Yeah, that, oh, well, yeah, yeah.
We'd done the Isle of Wight years ago and we got interviewed on like a red carpet, fucking loads. And I'll tell you my version of events. So they're asking you, are you looking forward to the Sex Pistols? And I just said, I'll be honest, I'm not really looking forward to them that much because, you know, the Stooges are playing before them and I'm a much bigger fan of the Stooges. I said, Johnny Rotten's on Butter commercial. And as far as I'm concerned, that's against everything he ever stood for.
Yeah.
So all this is going out. And then we took some magic after the gig. Me and us, we had some MDMA. And so then the Sex Pistols turned up and we're all like, yeah, you know, floating along. We forgot about what we'd said. And they must have heard it. So they all got out the car and like the drummer or the guitarist and the singer, Johnny Rotten, are like looking at us like this. And it was like, and Russ went, all right, Johnny. Like that. And we were like giggling, do you know what I mean? And so they just thought we were taking a picture. So they must have heard what we said on the radio, on the local radio. And he turned around to me and Russ, he went, fuck off, you make a show of the working classes.
Yeah, he cut to me as well.
Yeah, but
oh my God. You
know, I won't go into that, but that was the thing I remember. But me and Russ, because we were so fucking high and just like on cloud fucking whatever, we were just like, yeah!
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it made it worse. It was like, we've just been Johnny Rotten.
Yeah. Oh my God, you can't use the working class as an excuse. I don't think the working classes get 100 grand to sell butter or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
no, well, I don't know. I just think like he just, it must have hit him hard. But then he played, and it was kind of like, you know, I didn't really watch because I was just floating about. Yeah, so,
Guys, this album's an absolute banger, and it's going to do good things because it's a banger. It's a really good listen. Out 26th of April. There's a tour in April. I don't think there's a London date in the tour. Is there?
Kingston. It's
the Prim.
Prism. Yeah, Prism.
Oh, Prism, not Prims.
There's two there. Is that considered London?
Yes, and now you've said it, I remember reading that, and I feel like an idiot. But, so I'm going to cut that out. There you go. So you're playing in London. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, yeah. No, thank you both for coming on. It's a real pleasure to meet you both.
Nice to meet you.
I've always been a fan, and it's nice to hear a record after this long that is still right up there in quality.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah. Thank you.
Best of luck with all of it. And thanks very much.
Hopefully see you again.
Oh, nice one, Kevin. Take care. Have a nice day.